Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I'm joined by Christopher Hopper. Chris is a Salesforce recruiter based out of the US. He's someone that's been on the podcast before, and it's always great to catch up with him and hear more about what he's seeing in the market in the US, as well as talk about global trends and how they relate to the ANZ Salesforce market too. So yeah, this was a real deep dive into what we've seen over the last year or so in the Salesforce ecosystem, the skills that have been in demand, are in demand now, and what we see the future looking like. We touch on many, many topics around job searches, candidate attraction, and just really delve deep into what we're seeing in the Salesforce ecosystem and some of the things we've seen over the last 12 months. I really recommend that you follow Chris on LinkedIn, and hopefully you enjoy this episode. If you do, please do subscribe for future episodes that are coming through. Chris, here we are again. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Ben. Great to see you, man. Thanks for having me.
I thought it's been too long. We haven't done one of these in a while, and I thought there's a lot to talk about, right? We had a crazy year. I think the whole world has changed since we last spoke. So I feel it's a good chance to catch up on what's been happening over the last 12 months.
No, it's great. I think it's a great timing. You're right. 2020 was kind of a unique and an odd year for us all. And we're seeing some new things transpire in 2021. So I'd love the opportunity to talk to you a little bit more about that.
Sure. And for listeners that will know you as Chris the Recruiter, your situation is you're still a recruiter, but there's been a slight change in some other activities or interests that you have. So can you kind of fill us in on that?
Sure. So last summer, I had the opportunity to partner up with a company called the Nuage Group. They are a Salesforce consulting company out of the Woodlands, which is a suburb of Houston. And I had known the owner for years. I helped him recruit, and it's just someone I had a relationship with for a long time. And he decided to get out of the consulting business. He was a Salesforce consulting partner. I think they were established 12 years ago, and brought the opportunity to my attention to be a partner in that company. And so myself and a few others decided to team and buy the partnership from him. And now we're running the Nuage Group. So part of my job being with that company is not only providing consulting services, I'm also responsible for sales and account management and things of that nature. And so I'm doing that in addition to my normal recruiting to Empira staff for customers that need contract services or full-time placement services. I had someone reach out to me actually last week and asked me if I was still doing the recruiting side of it and if I was just recruiting for Nuage or if I was recruiting for Empira staff. And so now I really have to wear two hats for two different companies in parallel.
Yeah, nice. So are we going to see you back in like a consulting role yourself? Like, will you be doing implementations?
That's a good question. You know, I thought about it, and short answer is not right now. I enjoy the client relationship piece of it and the sales aspect of it and try to understand a little bit more about what they're looking to do with Salesforce. But there's people that we have internally that are much more experts than I am. I'm just a little bit too far removed. So I don't do the day-to-day hands-on implementation work anymore. And I think they're a lot more better suited to do the implementation work. I just like talking at a high level, understanding what the challenges are, making sure we're meeting their specifications, kind of that account management layer versus the day-to-day delivery aspect of it.
Sure. You've traveled too much and had too many coffees over the years to get back into that game, hey?
Well, I did start to get a little burned out from it too, right? So late nights, the weekends, sometimes dealing with difficult situations, which I still do today as a recruiter. But, you know, when I kind of set that sail in regards to day-to-day delivery, I didn't really feel inclined to jump right back into it. And it's been 4 or 5 years. And so I still get a little bit of a flavor of it, but it's not something where I'm dying to get in there and start configuring. Plus, I think I just wouldn't do a great job like some people we have in-house to be able to do it because they're doing it on a day-to-day basis versus me trying to, you know, have that learning curve again.
Sure. So what did 2020 look like in the US Salesforce market for anyone that's listening that's not in the US? You know, we all see what's happening on the news and follow what's going on globally. I'm guessing everyone kind of is across what's happening and in lots of different countries. But the US is an interesting one because obviously from Australia, where we've had, you know, a better impact than other countries from a COVID perspective, obviously we did have some
touchy months for our friends in Melbourne and Victoria. But on the whole, COVID's been relatively under control here. So what kind of impact did it have on the US and the recruitment market and consulting market now, I guess?
Well, it's been tough. I mean, at least the beginning of, let's say, the first two quarters of 2020 and probably even into Q3 was really rough, I think, more than anything else. Because so much unknown was in the marketplace as far as how long is this COVID going to last? What are we going to do about our projects? Are we going to count them all together? Are we going to pick back up in 2021? And so we are seeing consultants become more available on to come on the bench, right? And being laid off from organizations. A lot of consulting companies were actually laying off in the masses as well, because if their clients weren't producing revenue and weren't generating new opportunities and continue down that path in certain industries, then obviously it rolls down to the consultancy level and the contractors and kind of a whole Salesforce ecosystem as a whole were being impacted. You know, we saw some companies that continue to move forward because some industries were still needing the commerce cloud was picking up steam, communities was picking up steam. There are certain, I guess, areas of the ecosystem that continue to strive, but I think sales and market in some aspect were starting to feel a little bit of a lull, or they're trying to strategize about how to continue to either maintain market share or still gain traction on the market in an electronic format, a digital format, and trying to, their hand was being forced to be able to do that versus just not really wanting to move as fast as they may initially thought they needed to.
Sure. So did you see things picking up towards the end of 2020?
Yeah, we did. I mean, started probably in November. So, you know, obviously the holidays started to account for a little bit of a lull as well. But I think as soon as we got through the holiday period and, you know, we started to see a little bit of momentum in, just say, end of November, beginning of December, a little bit of slowdown during the holidays. And then when January hit, and now here we are beginning of February, we're seeing a lot of momentum in the marketplace, whether it's, and it's across the board, whether it's sales or service or CPQ or communities, marketing, those are kind of key areas that I focus in. But my gut tells me if it goes as well as the first month of 2021 and towards the end of 2020, I think 2021 is going to be a pretty strong year across the board for everyone.
Sure. In Australia, we had a couple of months where it was, yeah, people were kind of sat on their hands waiting for, I guess, direction and observation from other companies and seeing, you know, who's going to kind of lead forward from this and what direction are we going to go in. But on the whole, we were really fortunate with how the market panned out kind of from, I would say, kind of the second half of the year was kind of back to normal, I would say, from a volume of opportunity perspective. You mentioned Commerce Cloud. Is that an area that you had on your radar as a big growth area anyway, or was it COVID that kind of launched that forward there?
I think COVID definitely had an impact to it. I had helped customers with Commerce Cloud in the past, but they were starting to see a shift last year as far as more customers moving into commerce and delivering their goods and services digitally. And so when SIs that were seeing that and their customers seeing it tends to have a downstream impact from a recruiting standpoint, where I was trying to find folks who had that experience. And, you know, I think Commerce Cloud is just one of those niche skills. There's just not a whole lot of experts in that particular area of the industry. And so finding that talent has been a challenge.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny because I had a conversation with a client this morning and they were highlighting the need for someone to have Commerce Cloud experience as well as Velocity and you name it, they needed it. I was like, these people just don't exist here. Like, you know, from what I've seen in the market, the Commerce Cloud people seem to be from like a bit left field. They're not coming from the core Salesforce stack background. So yeah, it's interesting because it wasn't really something that was on my radar too much. I was aware of Commerce Cloud, but all of a sudden it became a big thing here. And we were hearing of companies that were, you know, having unbelievable sales figures running through Commerce Cloud. And you know, I guess fortunately for them, they'd been able to get it done in time for COVID and, you know, it was up and running. But yeah, some of the results that we were hearing companies achieving through really difficult times because they'd made that investment in Commerce Cloud.
Right. Yeah, Commerce Cloud is definitely a niche skill set. The roles that I've been getting around developers in Commerce Cloud, whether it's Demandware, is heavy JavaScript, right? It seems like they have a lot of heavy JavaScript skill set and different JavaScript libraries that are needed to be able to customize the Commerce Cloud solution for customers.
Sure. So do you think there's a skill set in the Salesforce ecosystem which is recession-proof?
I mean, I think there's, to me, data and integration are those two areas that I think will always be a need for, to be able to integrate clouds, to be able to integrate Salesforce, the backend ERP system, to be able to get data from one point to another. I don't think that is going to ever go anywhere. I think I just felt like integration and being able to understand how data flows amongst systems is where it's going to continue to be the most demand and the hardest skill set, I guess, to find, as well as being the most recession proof of anything else. Like, you know, the technologies, they'll come and go, but to be able to transform data and move it throughout different areas of the enterprise is what I think the backbone to any major organization.
Sure. Where are you seeing now the most demand, like in terms of like just your largest volume of requirements, where do you see them, like skill set wise?
CPQ, and that thing is the hardest skill set to find in the US. I mean, I've had open CPQ developer roles for 3, 4, 5 months, CPQ architects, and a lot of these are full-time positions, so they're going to be US citizens or green card holders and wanting to work full-time. You know, most of them are either working for a consulting company, making big bucks at a consulting firm, or they're independents, right? And a lot of times independents are managing 2 or 3 customers at a time. But to go for a full-time CPQ architect or a full-time CPQ developer in-house for an industry-based organization, I mean, I pull my hair out every day, or I get more gray hair than to say every day because of it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's really interesting because we still don't see too many like cloud specific skill sets in Australia and New Zealand. Like the odd candidate might be like, I'm a CPQ specialist, but on the whole, we have, you know, yeah, really cloud agnostic, like just people that work across the platform.
Wow.
So obviously we have Simplus here who have strong CPQ expertise, and they have CPQ specialists in the business, but we're not seeing too many people that are tying themselves to one cloud or one vertical. People will just kind of work across, like when a client comes to us, they're looking for a developer who might have done some CPQ work, or, you know, a functional consultant that's worked with CPQ. But if someone came to me and said, I need a CPQ specialist, I'd be like, well, you're gonna have to wait a few years until the market kind of evolves to that point and people start putting their hand up as that specialist, because at the moment there's only a handful.
Yeah, and then if that comes to you, you need to run away as fast as you can.
Yeah, that's it. Well, you saw one of my posts yesterday where I was saying, you know, it's easier than ever to find a Salesforce professional, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're everywhere you look.
Yes. If you know, if companies they do know, because they put job posts out there and they realize how hard it is to find an experienced professional. And, you know, I put a post out a few weeks ago, like, something's got to crack. Now, either the industry and companies that are looking for mandatory 2, 4, 5 years experience, either going to lessen that requirement, or the candidates need to crack and quit chasing after their hopes and dreams to become a Salesforce professional. And my post was for the candidates to continue to push on, because I think eventually customers cannot just continue to have these high expectations, because they'll never fill the role and they'll never be able to make any traction in their implementation work if they're continuing to set the bar so high. So I'm hoping that customers will start to put some flexibility and think about alternatives and get smart about the situation, because we just don't have enough experience applied to be able to fill all these needs that are out there.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? So my point yesterday was that if you think the hardest part of recruitment is finding a candidate, then you're mistaken, right? Even with your CPQ requirements at the moment, you know who the candidates are, you can find them, but it's actually how do you attract them and how do you get them to leave the role they're in, or how do you get them interested in the role you have? And I think that's the bit that a lot of companies miss. They're like, oh, well, you know, I go on LinkedIn, there's Salesforce developers everywhere and Salesforce functional consultants. And like our survey last year, I think it was like 7% of candidates are in between jobs. So out of all of the candidates in the market, only 7%, and they might not be the most experienced candidates, those 7%, they might not have the most new skill sets. You know, there's so many different variations. So yeah, I think companies really need to focus on actually what are we doing to attract talent, and why would someone choose us over every other role that they can choose in the market?
Exactly. And I ask customers, what are the selling points that you want me to use on your behalf to help sell the message? And if they can't convince me, it's hard for me to convince someone else to go and work there, you know. And if you're paying market salary, for example, you know, salary may be one of the levers. It doesn't have to be the only lever. It could be benefits. It could be company culture, and that means different things to different people. Well, you know, there's different varieties. But if you're telling me the same thing that I've heard from the last four customers that want the same thing as what you're looking for, what, you know, how can I have a good conversation with a candidate and convince them to make a move if everything is in polarity at that point?
Yeah, 100%. So if a CPQ architect put their hand up to you and, you know, several other recruiters at once and said, I'm looking for a new permanent role, how many opportunities would land on their desk?
I mean, in a given week, if they're a CPQ specialist, they've been doing it for, say, 2+ years, they probably have 20 opportunities in a given week for them, right? And here's the thing. If they're a specialist, right, and they can make 1.5 times being a contractor, a lot of times, you know, if money is their main motivational factor, right, and that's their driver, why would they not be an independent contractor? The demand is there, even for the contract services. To me, and that's what I did. I left Accenture and became an independent contractor. I knew my skills were up to par, and I would continuously have demand for my services and making more money as a contractor versus a consultant. Again, I was a different place in time in my life where I wasn't married and I could travel across the U.S. and there was, you know, I could work weekends and have no work-life balance because I was grinding, you know, as much as I could from a career perspective and being independent. And so my point is that if other contractors or all CPQ specialists sort of have the same mindset as I did at that time, there's nothing really compelling for them to move into a full-time position unless they're being offered an enormous amount of money to be able to take that full-time role.
Sure. So this is an interesting one because you have been a contractor, right? So it's interesting to get your view on this because I've been thinking this week about when someone comes to me with a permanent requirement and they're like, you know, we need someone that has done this before. In my head, I'm like, well, then hire a contractor. Because if you're only hiring someone to do a job that they've already done, then why is that a good opportunity for a permanent person? Because like a permanent person is coming to you to learn. And if they're only coming to do what they've already done, then they're only coming for, you know, it could be culture, it could be money, but ultimately it's not going to keep them engaged for very long if they're only doing things they've already done. So is that your view as well, in that if you're hiring for something that someone's already done and can't give them anything new, then that's when you would hire a contractor. But if you've got an environment where you can help someone get to the next level, that's when a permanent employee is the right move?
Yeah, unless the employee is just, you know, if they're unemployed, for example, and they're looking for something, right? Or if they're just wanting to be status quo and not really advance in their career, right? So I guess there is a small percentages that fit into those different buckets where it's going to be a like-for-like position to go into, or they don't really care about additional opportunity or growth mindset or whatever it may be. They just are kind of checking a box and working 9 to 5 and getting in and getting out and doing what they've always done, which some people are like that then. So it's not like those people don't exist. But I think if a company wants to get a higher caliber candidate, then you're right. I mean, the additional skills and opportunities and projects and technology that are available to them has to be compelling enough for them to make a move.
Yeah, I completely agree. What's the market like there for junior candidate? I already know the answer to this, but new entrants to the Salesforce market, like how is it? Because, you know, I think you and I have discussed this before. Like if you're someone that's looking from the outside in and you see the growth that Salesforce are communicating around this many jobs and, you know, this, we're going to need this many new people in the market. Like it does look like a place you can come and pick up a role quite quickly. So what's the reality now in the current climate for someone that hasn't got any Salesforce experience, but has, you know, certifications and Trailhead experience?
I mean, as always, I think it continues to be challenging. I don't see many roles out there, at least publicly, where those entry-level positions are being offered. You know, we had a career fair sponsored by Salesforce and quite a few companies at the career fair. This is 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I put a post out there to hear some feedback from it, and it seemed like all the people that came that were entry-level didn't have much of a shot. I mean, it just seemed like the companies that did show up that were recruiting were looking for, this is a blanket statement, I know this didn't happen across the board, but majority of the companies that were there were looking for the experienced talent, and the experienced talent probably isn't going to a career fair because they're happily working somewhere else. So it's like, you know, it doesn't really make sense as far as how these things stack up together and why we're doing a career fair for experienced folks, and experienced folks aren't showing up in the career fair. So why don't you have a career fair for entry level only? Because I think you have a better turnout and set expectations correctly in doing so versus just having a general career fair for anybody and everybody, because those everybody, anybody's going to be the ones that are looking for their first break.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've spoken before with us about the challenges of interviews and sometimes not having the right person turn up on the first day and things like that. I've seen a few posts from a guy, I think he's in New York, that had some challenges. This was on Twitter, where they hired a guy and it was someone completely different that turned up on the first day recently. Is that still a big problem there? And I guess what's the landscape like in terms of remote working at the moment? Because surely that's only going to make that more challenging.
Yeah. Well, it'll make it easier for the fake candidates, I guess. But, you know, since I've been doing this for 5 years now, I've established a pretty good network of folks that we work with or we screened in the past. So I started to get a feel for who's who. But yeah, it's still a challenge as far as who's going to show up. And we always have some bad apples along the way, and that's going to continue to be the case. You know, I have folks that they hire on, they pass the interview well, they started the project, and then they end up kicking the work off to someone else, right? And then claim it as their own. And sometimes companies deal with that because the work's getting done, right? They don't, they know who they hired, and they realize that the person they hired isn't really doing the work. And so it's like, well, we can't afford switching this person out right now, or I don't want to mess with this. So as long as the work's getting done, we don't really care who's doing it. As long as it's being done correctly, that's the main objective. So it's always one of those, you know, crapshoots, so to speak, as far as when it comes to contract labor and you know, and another thing is just even contractors that are taking on multiple projects. Like I get calls occasionally saying, you know, Chris, we think so-and-so is, he didn't leave his previous position and now he's working for us, but he's not available during normal working hours, or we can't get a hold of him, or he can't attend these conference calls that we have. And lo and behold, he never quit his previous position to begin with. So now he's working two roles simultaneously or trying somehow to do it. And within a couple of weeks, it comes to a head. And then I get a phone call from the client saying, Chris, we don't think this person quit his previous job. And now he's trying to balance both of them, and it never works out.
It's crazy. Like, I think the market there is just so much bigger than here, because like you that just wouldn't work here. I mean, it might work for a little while and someone might get away with it once, but it's quite likely that someone would know people at the old company here and be like, oh, he's still working here. Like, what's the deal there?
That happened. You know, it's crazy. I've seen resumes for people that come into me that are contractors. Again, this is stereotypically the H-1B contractor market that I'm speaking with. I get a resume from somebody, and on his resume, he shows that he worked at my previous client. And I go back to the previous client. It's like, have you ever heard of this person? He's got your name or your company name on the resume. And like, we have no idea who that is. The technologies are talking about we don't even run here. And so it's just, you know, it's messy, man. That's, I think, recruiting as a whole and contract labor. But at the end of the day, there's H-1Bs here that have to work, and they're here for a reason, and they need to be employed. They're getting sponsored, so they're doing what they can to try to get their opportunity. I understand it. I understand U.S. companies sometimes want to pay less than market rate, so they have to hire, you know, an H-1B contractor. And so you're right. I mean, this is the whole way that all the dynamics work can get pretty messy. So I don't like to point fingers and say who's right or who's wrong. I just have to kind of deal with it in the industry that I work in, and just try to make the most of it and try to be ethical and make sure I'm doing right for the consultant and for the client and for me as a recruiter.
So is everyone pretty much working remotely at the moment there?
Yeah, for the most part, you know, we had a couple of customers that are trying to slowly transition back into the office. I had one customer who, you know, sent all the consultants or the contractors or employees a letter to say, we would like you to get back in the office, but here's a waiver form about why you can't. Either you got preemptive, I guess, to COVID. There's a change or a high likelihood of catching COVID, for example, or your kids are at home from homeschooling, so you need to work to be able to balance them at home, and you're managing that process. And so, you know, mostly for the most part, I would say 90% are still 100% remote, but we have a small set of customers who are trying to slowly, gradually get back in the office unless you can producing these waivers, which they don't argue about it, and they just say, okay, well, that's good enough for us, and continue to work remotely in that case.
And are you finding that, do you think it will be hard to get people back into the office on the whole?
I think it depends on the person, individual, but I think holistically, yes. I think everyone's got a flavor for how productive they can be at home and being able to be casual in their appearance and working remotely, and been spoiled to some extent about the remote work. And so I think it's going to be a challenge from a recruiter standpoint when companies come back and say, Chris, we're not offering remote, it's back in the office. Salesforce talent is hard to find as it is. It's going to be that much more challenging when I have a customer who's hard pressed on making sure they're in the office. I mean, can you imagine CPQ developer, 3 years experience, paying market conditions, and being in the office Monday through Friday? The cards are stacked against me no matter which direction I'm looking in that case.
Yeah, sure. Do you think with the increase in remote working, it's going to further increase offshoring?
That's a good question. Probably so. I mean, I don't know why it wouldn't, right? If a customer doesn't care if you're working remotely, if you're in the U.S. or if you're offshore, I think it's going to really be based on the deliverable work, right? And, you know, if someone offshore can produce quality deliverables and be on calls with customers or with the business and understand their requirements and their needs and be able to do solutions around it, it just takes a special, I guess, skill set and analytical thinking to be good at being a Salesforce professional. And sometimes if you're doing just straight development, then, and you're handling requirements to the developer, be really careful the developer is, you know, in the Ukraine or in India or Philippines or in the US, probably not. I mean, if that's the case, it just depends on the role and how much of an impact or how much influence they need to have with the ultimate stakeholders in the business when it comes to the implementation work.
Yeah, I mean, it's a question I got asked recently, and I guess the obvious answer is probably yes, but we haven't seen that yet so much. Like, I think it's still early days. But the good thing is, like, we did have a real lack of remote opportunities in Australia and New Zealand. Like, I think it was, you know, you might get the odd day here and there and working from home, and some people would push more so than others. But now it's, overnight, it's there's been a complete shift. And I think that's it's to be expected, I guess. But people now are standing behind the fact that we've proven we can work remotely. Therefore, we don't need to be back in the office full time.
Yeah. You know, one of the challenges that comes to mind is the remote work and then taking on more than one project at a time for more than one company, especially because, you know, you're not really getting as micromanaged like you would maybe in the office. And so there needs to be a certain level of trust. But if you're working remote, you know, and you're good at what you do and you're getting pinged daily for additional projects to be able to take on, it's hard to say no to that, right? So ultimately trying to figure out how to balance and juggle all these different projects coming to you at once and being able to do that sufficiently, if that's what your mode of operation is.
Yeah, I don't see that side of things being too much of a challenge here in Australia, but I guess I think we're kind of playing catch up in certain areas to what you have there, and who knows what the market's going to look like here in a couple of years. But yeah, that's something I'm not looking forward to, finding out that someone's working on two projects and not delivering.
Yeah, it sucks having those conversations, and there's really no way that we would have known that was going to happen, right? And the guy told us to put in his notice. Starts the next week or next 2 weeks with a new employer, and then 2 weeks into it, they realize that he's not doing what he said he was going to do and meeting the dates they said he was going to meet and meeting the calls that he said he was going to take. And yeah, and so it's troubling and it's hard to have those conversations, but I don't really have any other choice.
Yeah, for sure. So back onto the topic of new candidates, and obviously, you said it's a challenging market for people. Do you still stand by the whole personal branding thing and, you know, creating your own content and creating your own experience?
I do. I don't think there's any other way, right? And I posted something about this today, actually, on LinkedIn. And you know, a lot of times I see people posting, hey, I'm certified, I've had a super badge now, and who's hiring? I mean, if that's your way going into the marketplace, I'm sorry, but that's going to be, you're going to have some struggles going into that approach. And so my post was, what are you going to do with it, right? What value does that hat certification or that super badge or being a trail ranger, what value are you adding with that other than having, you know, this credential, right? And so if you're not figuring out how to use those credentials to be able to extract value and show what you can do and what you can perform and how you can solve problems, and using your personal intelligence and thought process to be able to figure that out, you know, it's just like me and you, Ben. You know, you come up with different ideas, and I come up with different ideas to stand out in the marketplace, right? So we're in marketing, we're in sales, we're trying to, you know, get new customers, get new candidates. You know, that's what we do. And so you and I are both always thinking about different ways that we can do things, whether it's podcasts or articles or different content. And so as a sales force professional trying to land your own position, you should be doing the same thing that me and you were doing. It's the same thing, in my opinion, as far as building a personal brand and using some thought-provoking actions to be able to stand out from the crowd. People are going to hire you based on what you personally bring to the table versus something that everyone else has as well as a credential, because that's just strictly, you know, learning, answering AB questions. And I don't want to take away from certifications and trailheads. I know it's time and effort, but I'm saying if you have the same access that everybody else does, then you're on an equal playing field. And until you get off of that ledge and become a little bit uncomfortable about doing something differently for yourself and showing employers what you can do, you're going to struggle. I mean, that's just the bottom line for me.
Yeah, it's interesting the amount of people that start and then stop.
Yeah.
Like they might have spoken to you, they might have spoken to me, they might have spoken to someone else, and you see them post something, and then it might not get the most engagement, or you know they didn't get a job, and then they stop, and it's the key with everything, right? Is consistency. It builds up.
It's a long game. I mean, you got to build credibility, you got to build influence, and that doesn't happen with one post. I post every day, almost as much as I can, right? You do podcasts and you do your thing as much as you can, right? And that's what it takes to stand out. And if you're not willing to do that and really to go well in as far as getting your first job as a Salesforce professional, you may not be wanting to get into this, because you know you and 1,000 other people are seeing the opportunities out there, you know, as far as a newcomer coming in. And even if you've been heard or drank the Kool-Aid from Salesforce marketing that certifications help get you from the door and badges will help you and this and that, there's a lot more to the overall picture that you need to think about and be consistent with your point, being consistent about in order to stand out. Like, I think if you were to go all in within 6 months and constantly writing about your progress, what you're learning, the solutions you can provide customers, if you did that every day or say even once a week for a 6 month duration, I'm pretty confident you'll start getting some good interviews in a position. But if you decide to do it once and stop, there's no way your credibility is built with only one attempt.
Yeah, for sure. So Salesforce developers, for me, that's the hot one, right? So, you know, it's always Salesforce developers. We need a senior dev. They need to have done this, that, and the other. Are you still seeing like huge growth for developers? And also, are you seeing developers wanting to do more than Salesforce?
Yeah, and sometimes I'm seeing Salesforce developers getting pulled into other directions outside of Salesforce too, whether it's working on Azure or AWS or Google and some of these other technologies. They're starting to get some other opportunities to work outside of just Salesforce as a whole. But development continues to be the number one skill set that is needed, right? I think it's 12,000 open Salesforce developer jobs last time I looked in the U.S.
12,000?
Yeah, there's 12,000 open positions.
There's not even 12,000 Salesforce professionals in Australia, I don't think.
Well, again, there may be a little bit of overlap with this because a lot of times a company will put it out to 3 or 4 different headhunting companies. So there is some overlap. So I won't say 1,200 net new Salesforce developers. And that can be over, I looked over 6 months or something. So there's a little bit of overlap, but the point being is there's a lot, right? Like maybe 10,000 net new. And I look at how many candidates are looking for positions that were US citizens or green card holders in the US, and it was like 200. So it's like there's such a disparity between the talent that's available, that's looking, and the demand of looking for that particular talent. So, you know, and I posted something about just getting some suggestions about how to close that talent. And, you know, if the talent continues to exceed the supply, then this is going to be a gap that we'll constantly be challenged with.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I for me, the hardest role to fill is when typically a technology business, so like a fintech or a real estate tech, when they come to us and they're looking for a Salesforce, and they would call them an engineer, right? So as soon as I hear someone say, I need a Salesforce engineer, I immediately know what I'm in for, because they're looking for someone that truly is an engineer and comes from an engineering background and wants to have discussions with other engineers and talk about, like, not look at everything through a Salesforce lens. So actually, could we build this on something else, and it's going to be more cost effective or going to deliver a better result for our business? And that's always the hardest role to fill, because you'll speak to a Salesforce developer and a lot of them don't want to work on stuff outside of Salesforce. They're like, well, that doesn't help me get to where I want to be, potentially being a CTA if they're just coding on other platforms. And it's just, yeah, really hard to find someone that does. And I've had a couple of conversations recently, like Brooks, the guy over there, that he ex-military, you know, really passionate about just being a great engineer. And that was really refreshing to hear. But is that a struggle for you, finding devs that want to do more than Salesforce? Is it like, they want me to do what? They want me to work with AWS?
Right. Well, it's that, or it's more of people not having that skill set too, right? So customers wanting, because, you know, I think a lot of times customers say, well, if I'm paying $140, $150, $160 US, I got to get more than just Salesforce development out of them, right? We got all these other technology stacks in our enterprise. If I'm paying that much money for a dev, a Salesforce developer, then they need to have these other skill sets on top of just Salesforce development, right? So they're trying to extract as much talent out of one given individual and expertise because they're paying such a hefty price tag. So, you know, if you think about maybe Salesforce dug this ditch themselves, more or less. I don't want to sound like I'm pissed off about it, but all I'm saying is, you know, if the price tag for Salesforce developers continues to climb, customers want to be able to get more out of a given individual's talent to be able to make up that difference in the price tag.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yeah, that's one thing that people forget when they're talking salaries. It's like, you know, your salary is a reflection on the value that you add to the business, right? So just because someone else is earning 10K, 20K, 30K more than you, and just because you have the same job title, that doesn't mean that you should naturally just expect the same salary, because, you know, they might have skills that are outside of the core Salesforce platform, or they might have a particular skill that's of significant value to that customer. So yeah, I think if people are looking for a huge increase in salary from where they are at the moment, they have to understand they're probably going to have to do something that they're not doing right now to get that.
Yeah. The same thing on the admin front too, Ben. It's like, you know, admins, if companies want to get pay more for an admin, or, you know, pay, say, six figures for an administrator, a lot of times they may want to also get them to have some Apex skill set or some other technology expertise around that instead of paying such a quote-unquote high dollar for Salesforce admin. So it kind of goes in and made directions in this aspect.
Salary surveys, what do you think?
I mean, I just think they're overinflated, and I don't think they tell a real picture. I don't think there's enough details to them. I think some companies that put them out, they say that they actually talk to Salesforce professionals. I just have a hard time believing that a lot of times. That's my personal take on salary surveys, and I think they should be taken very lightly when someone's looking at. I put a post out about this the other day. It's like, you got to talk to other people. You got to talk to recruiters. You got to talk to companies. You got to talk to working professionals. That's where the underlying answer is why. It's not some bogus salary survey about devs making $200,000 a year. I don't see that. I'm in this every day. I'm in this talking to people every day and companies every day, like you are. And the salary surveys and the average salaries are just so much higher than what I'm hearing on the street. Just doesn't make any sense, you know, unless it's, you know, again, there's not enough details of the surveys. There's not enough about the skill set or the location or if they're working 70 hours a week, right? And so who knows what these salary surveys really consist of. I just think there's not enough meat to it to be able to make any assumptions.
Yeah, I get probably a couple of times a month I'll have a client reach out to me and ask to see a salary survey. And I always say, look, like, there are so many variables. If you're just purely basing someone, which a lot of these surveys do, it's like, well, someone that has 5 years experience is senior, therefore they should earn X. But like, the point I always make is I have 5 years Salesforce admin experience. You know, I had to ask someone to reset my password recently. I didn't know how to do it. You can't quantify experience by how long someone's been doing it, because if you could, I'd be like a great golfer, right? Because I've been hitting a golf ball really badly for many years. And right. And there are so many variables. Like, someone with CPQ experience right now might be paid differently to someone that doesn't have CPQ experience. So a blanket approach to salaries and locations and the company you work for can, you know, one partner might pay a senior 20K more than another senior, you know, another partner. So yeah, I strongly suggest that anyone that is looking to form an opinion on a salary, like you said, they speak to people that are right here, right now in the market that can, because it changes so regularly as well.
Yeah, and plus I give a range. You're probably looking anywhere between 85 and 100, right? If you're given a $15,000 range, that's to capture majority of the market, right? So you think about the 80-20 rule, right? So you give them a market range about 80%, you're most likely going to be hit somewhere within there. But say, in the exact dollar amount, there's too much involved with being able to do that. I mean, you ask the client, well, do you have a budget associated with this? A lot of times they say, no, Chris or Ben, what do you think this is paying? And then we give them the range and they say, well, I'm not looking to pay that much. I'm like, well, then you got to lower your years of experience then, or lower the skill set required. I mean, there's only so many levers you can pull. And if salary is one that you're stuck on, it has to be below market conditions for the skill set, you know, you got to lower the skill set requirement then.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess final question, if you were starting your Salesforce career now, let's say you're not technical, because obviously we don't want to put everyone in a technical bracket because it's obvious then to look at developer roles, but where would you focus your kind of study? Like what would you want to become if you could be anything in the Salesforce ecosystem for the future of opportunities?
I mean, I like consultancy, right? I like being a VA. I think VA is being one of the easier routes to take initially, being a Salesforce VA, as long as you have some good communication skills. You have a personality to you. You don't mind sitting in meetings, discuss requirements with customers. I just think the business analyst role is a good stepping stone for any early Salesforce professional to get into to start their career, right? And, you know, obviously being a VA, you might have to do some proof of concepts, probably working with some other team members that are more experienced than you. You can learn from them, watch over their shoulder, maybe doing some, having them be a mentor to you as well. The VA role that I'm referring to is a VA that's going to be hands-on still, like not just being a pure business analyst that's just too far removed from the technology, but a VA that has still the opportunity to be hands-on and deliver solutions and do proof of concepts, you know, being in front of the customer, showing how those solutions meet their requirements, things of that nature. That's a critical function of any project implementation, and there's just not enough quality VAs, in my opinion, to go after that work. And that skill set is not that hard to achieve, in my professional opinion. There's some uneasiness as far as talking in front of people and showing solutions and doing prototypes. So there's a little bit of a learning curve as well. I just don't think it's as steep as being a developer, for example.
Sure. Yeah, I think often the gap between being an admin and being a functional consultant is being a good BA. And a lot of people don't see that, right? They just keep focusing on the technology and picking up more certifications or gaining exposure to more clouds, when actually the gap might just be how they present, how they run a workshop, how you actually gather requirements and push back on requirements and actually get something that's locked in, that's realistic, and the client knows what they can expect.
Yeah, that's the value lies, right? As far as being able to do that, you know, I know some people don't have the personality and just want to be a coder or an admin, just sit in the corner and be handed information. I just think that that role can be done cheaper elsewhere. Right. And so you don't want your job to be in jeopardy. And I think the way to prevent that from happening is to have a lot of those soft skills and be able to continue to be better at those and be able to contribute and lead and train and mentor. Those are the things that aren't as easy to come by, and those are the things that you should focus on.
100%. Well, always a pleasure to catch up, and we won't leave it so long next time.
That sounds great, man. It's been great. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Catch you soon.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.